Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The Bengals beat the Chiefs in the AFC Championship last year in overtime. Chiefs safety Justin Reed wasn't on the team at the time, but he was asked what he would have done differently in that game. Here's what Justin Reed said.
A lot of it's going to come down to making the play on the ball, you know, and they have 88, Higbee. No, it's not. Is it not Higbee? It was with the Rams. What's his name? It is Higgins. It's Higgins. Higbee and Higgins. They're going to have him back. He's a very talented receiver, too. More of a finesse type of guy. Not the best blocker. I'm going to lock him down. You know, straight up. So, you know, we're going to have to come out of the game, like I said, play our best game and go out and do it.
Reed thereafter got out the mop and the bucket, and he went to Twitter to say this. To be honest, I meant Hayden Hurst for the man matchups. Nevertheless, any and everybody is still getting locked up. That caught the attention of Bengals tight end Hayden Hurst. Here's what he had to say about Justin Reed's remarks.
I don't know. I mean, you could pick anybody in this locker room, but you know, I feel like I'm the last person you probably want to talk shit about because I have a long memory.
Well, you don't need a long memory because the game's just a few days from now. And Peter, Justin Reed fumbled this one on another level because he was asked what he would have done if he would have been part of the Chiefs defense that day. Hayden Hurst wasn't on the team. CJ Uzomah was the tight end at the time. Hurst came in the offseason after Uzomah left via free agency. So Justin Reed got that so wrong, he doesn't even know how wrong he got it.
I mean, this falls under the category of there's 6 days where football isn't played in most cities in the NFL. Okay? And this falls into the category of who gives a crap? I mean, Justin Reed is going to say, yeah, I'm going to lock down whoever I come up against. I mean, did he say Hayden Hurst stinks? No, he didn't say that. He didn't even know his name. And, you know, Hayden Hurst, I'm the last guy you want to talk crap about. I mean, who cares? You know, I just think, Mike, look, I'm an old man, and I'm sending my suit back. And I'm raging at the kids to get off my lawn. I get it. But in my years covering the NFL, there have been so many mountains made out of so many stupid molehills. And when I read about this yesterday, I just said to myself, classic example of people, I'm not saying inventing stuff. Okay, you want to use it as the fourth note in your locker room notes? That's fine. You want to make it a headline? It's silly. It is flat out silly.
Well, in this day and age, there are no longer fourth notes and locker room notes. Every little blurb like that is its own headline, but that's a different issue altogether. The point, I think, is that these two teams, for the most part, are very careful about saying anything that could be used as the old bulletin board material. You have a lot of bouquets being thrown back and forth between Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow. But I think there's an undercurrent of animosity there, especially coming from the Chiefs. The Chiefs lost to the Bengals twice last year, late in the regular season and in the playoffs. And, you know, at least with the Bills rivalry, the Chiefs are on the right side of it when it matters. The Bills have won the last two in the regular season, but until the Bills win in the postseason, the Chiefs still own the Buffalo Bills. The Bengals have quietly acquired title to the Kansas City Chiefs, and I think there's a lot more bubbling under the surface, and I'll interpret this dust-up between Reed and Hurst as just a little indication of what's being said behind closed doors. I think that, and that's good, because if they're carrying around pent-up frustration, maybe that guarantees a better football game. So I think it became a story because nobody else from those two teams is giving anyone anything that they can use to showcase what should be the one game that we're all circling this weekend. That this is a conference championship rematch between two teams that are on a collision course for the postseason. So it's a huge game, and except for Justin Reed and Hayden Hurst, everybody's keeping their mouths shut when it comes to saying anything that could be used against them.
I think what is really interesting when you think about the Bengals right now, Mike, I'm going to say something that is, you know, you've got to sort of put your thinking cap on a little bit, okay? But I think that if you look at two teams in the AFC, one of which was the number one seed last year, and the other of which everybody thought was the nominal best team in the AFC at the end of the year, only didn't win to go to the Super Bowl, and that's Kansas City. So if you take the Tennessee Titans and the Kansas City Chiefs, since January 1st, okay, the Cincinnati Bengals against those two teams are 3-0 and could be 4-0 in this calendar year, because remember, they played the Chiefs right after New Year's last year. I think it was January 2. And then they beat Kansas City again in the playoffs. And then, they're 4-0. They're 4-0 against those two teams because they beat Tennessee last year in the playoffs and then this year in the regular season. So I look at all this and I just say, I think it was fashionable, and I was probably among them, because I picked Baltimore to win the AFC North this year. I think it's fashionable to say that the team that loses the Super Bowl, history says that they don't perform all that well the next year. But it's a good thing Joe Burrow doesn't read history. I don't think he does. Maybe he does. Or at least he doesn't pay any attention to history, because he's slapping history in the face this year. For the Bengals to be 4-0 against the number one seed from last year and the team that everybody thought by the end of the year was the best team in the AFC, and could be 5-0 after Sunday, that is an amazing feat by the Cincinnati Bengals.
And it is stunning to me that the Bengals aren't more regarded as a Super Bowl contender. I think it's because last year's Super Bowl run had a pretty strong vibe of they got lucky. Now, they would disagree, and I disagree with it, but when you look at each of the games, there was that weird call on a play that looked a lot like the Josh Allen last night, rolling to the right and just at the sideline throwing the ball. Remember the inadvertent whistle that marred the win over the Raiders? And it didn't really feel like the Bengals were dramatically superior to the Raiders that day. They had to fend off a late drive by Las Vegas to win that game. And then they go to Tennessee, and Joe Burrow gets sacked 9 times, and somehow they get lucky and win that one. And then they go to Kansas City, and they're down big. What was it, 21-3 at one point in the first half, and it was over, and the Chiefs get greedy, and the next thing you know, it's a game, and the next thing you know, the Bengals win. And they almost won the Super Bowl, but I just don't think that a lot of people looked at what they did last year and said this is sustainable. And early in the season, those people were proven kind of right. But here come the Bengals. Even without Ja'Marr Chase, they've been very good in recent weeks. And now they get Chase back. And what they're doing is sustainable. And Joe Burrow is healthy. And Joe Burrow is getting it done. And Joe Burrow is determined. And we've just kind of forgotten about him. We get so caught up in Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and whoever the new flavor of the month is. Burrow was the flavor of the month last year. But we just kind of moved on. And I say we, like collectively, everybody who pays attention to football, I think we need to start paying a lot more attention to the Bengals. And we will if they win at home on Sunday, where they are 2.5-point underdogs to the Kansas City Chiefs. And I guarantee you that fact is going to be used by someone in that locker room to get those players even more fired up.
You know, I'm sure they will, but I don't think there's any shock to be underdogs to Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Andy Reid. You know, I mean, that's, I think.
You still take it as a slap in the face if you're the Bengals.
You might. I'm sure. And look, coaches can use anything at any time. And I'm sure that Zach Taylor, if he feels like it will help him, will use it because he's an NFL coach. And that's what NFL coaches do. I think here's the way I look at it, Mike. So in both of those games, you talk about why did the Bengals not enter this year getting the kind of respect that you think that they should. I think number one is history. The fact that Super Bowl losing teams traditionally have not been great the next year. And it's almost annual. Okay, that's number one. And number two, just remember, you know, In their last two games of the AFC playoffs, Ryan Tannehill and Patrick Mahomes threw five passes to Bengals. And so you get picked off five times. And even though you might be a better team than the Bengals, if you get picked off five times, you're not a better team than the Bengals. And I think, and the way that those things happened, the fact that Tannehill threw an interception in the last minute of the game, and the Bengals got in position for Evan McPherson to kick a 98-yard field goal, or, you know, whatever it was. And then the next week, almost the exact same thing happens. Mahomes throws that interception. I think it was to Von Bell. And you know, they go down and kick another field goal to win. I'm not in any way minimizing what the Bengals did. The Bengals won those games on the road fair, square, deservedly. What I am saying is that, you know, those, I'm not saying they're coin flip games, but they're damn close. And so I think that's why entering this year, plus the fact that Super Bowl losers don't perform that well the following year, that's why I think everybody was dubious on the Bengals.
Trivia question for you, Peter King. When is the last time the Kansas City Chiefs won a game in Cincinnati?
2017.
No? I was going to give you a hint. When is the year that you began covering the Cincinnati Bengals?
Oh, that's crazy. 1984?
Yes. That's the last time the
Are
Chiefs
you out of your
Cincinnati.
Mind?
That is... That's what the sheet
that
says.
That is the craziest thing I've heard.
The research has been confirmed. 1984, six straight losses. It's odd that they haven't played more than six times in 40 years, almost, in Cincinnati, since they're in the same conference and they cross paths more often than if they were in different conferences. But yes, six straight losses to the Bengals during that period. And it is surprising because for most of that period, the Bengals have been crap, and the Chiefs have been pretty good. So Cincinnati's got something figured out. I don't know. Maybe they send a bunch of bad chili to the Kansas City Hotel the night before the game. Maybe that's the secret.
Mike, that was – I just looked it up. That's the second NFL game I ever covered. It was the second game of that season. Kansas City 27, Bengals 22. I have zero recollection of it. I wonder who played quarterback. Would it have been Bill Kenny? Would it have been
Todd
Steve
Blackledge?
DeBerg? Todd Black could have been. Yeah, I bet it was Todd Blackledge. I bet it was Todd Blackledge against Ken Anderson. I bet.
In 84, was it Boomer Esiason? He was drafted in 84. So
well,
maybe
that would have been Boomer's second game as a Bengal. I don't think he was starting.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Ken Anderson would have been playing the first month or so. Yeah, Todd
Blackledge versus
Ken Anderson.
Weird.
Thank you, Courtney.
here's my suggestion. Unsolicited, free, so he's getting his money's worth. Andy Reid, fly Peter King to Cincinnati to cover this game if you want to win. That's the key. Bring Peter back. that's the only way if they want to make it happen in Cincinnati for the first time since the year of Ghostbusters, 1984.
Hey, Mike,
By the way. Go ahead.
By the way, isn't this one of the sneaky great weeks on the schedule, like, in a long time? Like, I am totally fascinated by Miami at San Francisco. Kansas City at Cincinnati is the game of almost any week this year, the way those two teams are playing. And I mean, there are so many really interesting matchups and important matchups this week. I think this is going to be, a fabulous Sunday.
And look, one of the realities of the schedule making process, which you always chronicle better than anyone, when they pick the big platform, primetime, non-flexible games in May, used to be April, now it's finalized in May, you get some games late in the year that look like they're going to be great, and you throw in 10, 11, 12, 13 weeks of football, and those games suddenly aren't great anymore. Then you have games that get tucked into a regional window at 4:05 Eastern that not much of the country is going to see. And those games become, why can't we see that in a standalone window in prime time? And that's the real, I don't want to say tragedy. I mean, relative to other things, it's not. But when you look at the great games we have this weekend, and maybe it's just there's so many great games, you can't find a spot for all of them for people to watch them. But the idea that the 49ers hosting the Dolphins is a regional 4:05 game, oh boy.
Unbelievable.
That arguably is the game of the day, all due respect to the Chiefs and Bengals.
Yeah. The fact, when you look at the schedule, the one thing that, you know, every week in my column, I look ahead to the next week, and the fact that this is a regional telecast that will be seen probably, and I'm serious, probably in about 18% of the country. It's absolutely shocking. This is, and I know we're going to talk about this game later, so I'll save a couple of little nuggets I have on this game.
We're going to talk about it right
now.
We're transitioning to it right now. So go.
Okay, good. I'm going to tell you why it's so shocking that it is in the place that it's in. Not only because Miami, and I was thrilled to see the Miami game against the Chargers made the Sunday night game. Because obviously, you, Mike, and you wrote this. You said, imagine how bad Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos are for the NFL to be flexing out of a Mahomes game. You know, there's two rules in the NFL office, okay? Don't flex out of the Dallas Cowboys. Don't flex out of Mahomes, period. And for them to flex out of Mahomes, that tells you that everybody in the NFL office thinks it's going to be 26-0 with 10 minutes left in the second quarter. That's what it tells you. Not 26, but whatever it is. But let's now go back to the fact that a game this good can be on television to 18% of the country. It's amazing. And the reason why I think that Miami is so interesting right now is that as much as any team can be hidden in the NFL, much as any good team, The Miami Dolphins are the most explosive team right now, downfield offensive team in football right now. And honestly, they've been hidden. You know, and in my opinion, they could get flexed again. The Miami at Buffalo game, which is supposed to be a Saturday game, I think they could be on 2 weeks in a row, Mike, on Sunday Night Football. You know, after going home and getting home at 9 o'clock in the morning after that Sunday night game at the Chargers, my guess is that they're going to be flexed into the Sunday night game the next week at Buffalo, where I'm sure it'll be nice and toasty at 8:20 on Sunday evening. But if I can say just one other thing about the X's and O's of this game that absolutely fascinate me, Tua Tagovailoa has missed 2.5 games this year. And on passes thrown more than 10 yards beyond the line of scrimmage this year, he leads the NFL, according to Next Gen Stats. He leads the NFL in downfield passes thrown in the center of the field. And what I mean is that Next Gen Stats separates the field into three 18-yard lanes, okay? On the left, in the center, and the right. And Tua Tagovailoa is the best by far at completing deep balls down the middle of the field, all right? The San Francisco 49ers, according to Next Gen Stats, are easily the number one team in defense in the center of the field. So this is like Fred Warner and, you know, that great young safety, Hufanga from USC. That has made this the story within a story this week, so that the 49ers, I think, they do best on defense, you know, to combat what Miami does best on offense. So I think this is an absolutely fascinating game.
One last point on the scheduling reality as well, because I've gotten this question from plenty of viewers and readers all week long. Why wasn't this game moved to prime time? Well, first of all, the NFL makes decisions. And second of all, it's a Cowboys game. As Peter said, one of the rules of the league office, never flex out of a Cowboys game. And I know they're playing the Colts. They could be playing the Ohio University Bobcats, quarterbacked by Russell Wilson, and you wouldn't flex the Cowboys out of primetime. You're getting $25 million guaranteed for a Cowboys practice, for crying out loud. So they're not flexing out of that game, no way, no how, and it's just kind of the way it all works out. Peter, let's hear a little bit from the head coach of the Dolphins, because another intriguing wrinkle to this, Mike McDaniel worked with Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco from 2017 through last year before becoming the coach of the Dolphins. Here's McDaniel on facing his former team in his first year as a head coach.
I will do everything in my power to make it another game, because I think that should be the objective of any head coach, is that you make it about the players. And I really stray away from making anything about me. I just don't believe in it. I think that I have a very high opinion of the 49ers franchise and players, coaches, staff members. You know, I have a lot of love for anybody that I work with, especially for that extended period of time.
Great point that Chris Sims made yesterday. Mike McDaniel knows D'Amico Ryan's defense better than Kyle Shanahan knows Josh Boyer's defense. Boyer's the coordinator in Miami. Ryan's was the coordinator last year in San Francisco when Mike McDaniel was there. McDaniel, a really smart guy, encyclopedic knowledge, took a lot of notes, I'm sure, when he was working with Kyle Shanahan and picked up on a lot of things. And, you know, yes, Shanahan knows him, but he knows the whole operation. And that just adds to the chess match of who's going to do what when to take advantage of the unique knowledge that they have about the other guy, Peter.
Mike, I can't get over the pineapple. You got
it. Oh, there's the pineapple.
You were staring.
It's not upside down.
When you
down.
Were staring at it's Mike McDaniel down, right there, Could you get over the pineapple? I mean, I don't know. That is the most distracting background that any coach or player speaks to every week in the NFL. I mean, we should have a vote. What is the weirdest background for any coach or player? This is the runaway winner. You've got the Dolphins and you've got the pineapple. Just very off-putting. Okay. So,
one of my favorite moments of the season. One of my favorite moments of the season, though, when we recognized in real time during the program the significance of the upside down pineapple.
Do we have the upside down pineapple, or do we not have it? I mean, that was
we'll
they're
see.
Efforting.
We'll see.
Efforting. We'll see if it, all right.
Yeah, they're efforting.
Mike. Okay. So there's one thing about what Chris Sims said that I think is incredibly spot on, okay? And that is that D'Amico Ryans right now, I talked to Fred Warner after the game last week, you know, when the 49ers pitched the fourth shutout of this NFL season against the Saints. And he talked about the thing he loves about D'Amico Ryans is, you know, he's a former player. He understands how players feel, what they want to do. He has a player feel of the defense. And I think the strength of McDaniel going against, of Mike McDaniel going against that defense is that every day last year in practice, every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday during the season, all through training camp, he saw the imprint that D'Amico Ryans put on that defense. There can't be many people. He's got to be the person in the United States outside of the 49ers building who knows that defense better than anyone. And I think that's significant. I think it's really, really significant because he has to know this week, how is D'Amico Ryans? You know, the old spy versus spy? You know what I'm going to do, so I'm going to do this instead of what you think I'm going to do. And you know, you go back and forth and back and forth. And I think what you're going to see in this game is Mike McDaniel look at what D'Amico Ryans does best. And I would not be surprised if in this game, you know, they counteract what D'Amico Ryans thinks he's going to do, which is try to throw the ball over the top of their great middle defense and maybe throw either a bunch of crossing routes or a bunch of sideline stuff more than they have the whole year. Who knows what they'll do? But I think that McDaniel having that advantage, his mind has to be swimming now with the ideas of what do they think we're going to do, and how are we going to counteract that?
Should be a great game. We're going to take a break. When we return, some of the other great games we will rip through for Week 13 as we remain on the lookout for the upside-down pineapple. there it is. Keep it right side up. You're sending the wrong message if it's upside down. We'll be back with more right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I understand that you guys have, a lot of questions, but with my legal team and my clinical team, there's only football questions that I can really address at this time. I was just trying to, whatever I can do to play football in 2022. So, you know, most of the settlement stuff with the NFL was mostly my agency and legal team. I had no control. My main focus was doing everything I need to do so I can play this year. Like I said, at this time, I can't address any of that stuff. Who knows what the future holds, but right now I'm so locked in on just basically being the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns.
Deshaun Watson meeting yesterday with reporters, declining to answer any questions unrelated to football. It was kind of surprising, Peter, because the last time we heard from him in the middle of August, on the same day he agreed to an 11-game suspension and a $5 million fine, he did answer questions. And he came off, not in an ideal way, maintaining his innocence on the same day he accepted that staggering fine and 11-game suspension. And look, you open yourself up to criticism when you clam up on a situation like this, but sometimes it's better to say nothing at all if there's a chance that what you say is going to make it worse.
You know, when Kalen Kaler, The Athletic, this week wrote that there will be a number, 10, 12, whatever, of his victims in NRG Stadium this weekend in a box, you know, with their legal team, I was fascinated by that. And the reason I was fascinated is that I don't believe there's going to be any overt demonstration, let's just say. But the fact that they're going to be there, I mean, if you're the CBS crew doing this game, you've got to show them on Sunday, period. You can't ignore that. You've got to show them at the game. And let's say, and I have no idea, will there be a demonstration outside? I don't know. But if there is, CBS has got to show that, period. You know, they've got to show the entire story of this game. This is a gigantic story in the NFL. And the fact is, it's happening on a week that there are so many ridiculously good and important games. But Mike, Deshaun Watson is going to play his first game in 700 days on Sunday. His first game, 2 weeks shy of 2 years, from the end of the year, or 3 weeks shy from 2 years. And I want to say one thing about football first, or about football now. And that is that, you know, I don't know how anybody can expect Deshaun Watson, who hasn't been hit in 2 years. He played at what? Two series in a preseason game, one, whatever it was. But here's a guy who hasn't been hit in 2 years. He hasn't played in a football game in 2 years. And I don't include a preseason game there in a very short amount of action in that game. But, I mean, I'm not saying that he's going to be lousy. I'm not saying he's going to be, I don't know what he's going to be. But I think some expectations that he's going to hit the ground running. I don't know how you hit the ground running in any walk of life when you haven't done that thing for 2 years. So if I were the Browns, I'd really temper my expectations about Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, practicing is not playing. The good news, though, is they're playing the 1-9-1 Houston Texans. Plenty of guys on the team never played with Deshaun Watson. And this may be a situation where, for as agitated as the organization tries to get over the fact that Watson rejected them and created this major distraction and made them all look bad, I still don't know that they're good enough to muster the reaction necessary, because the Browns are still the better team. And it does get tucked in that window. 1 o'clock Eastern, 8 games. Peter, the one thing that I'm curious about, beyond demonstrations, beyond the presence of accusers in a suite, the potential for chants like the one that we heard in Jacksonville. Jacksonville, of all places, they got no dog in this fight. They don't, I mean, it's, but they were loud and profane in reference to Deshaun Watson. And there's only so much that the microphones can avoid, the ambient noise of a game. When a certain two-syllable word starting with bull is called out repeatedly, you hear it. So it'll be interesting to see how the fans at large deal with Deshaun Watson and try to get in his head with the things they chant from the stands. All right, some other great games in that 1 o'clock window. The Jets at the Vikings. Who would have dreamed the Jets would be 7-4? Who would have dreamed the Vikings would be 9-2? And hey, look, the Vikings defense is not good statistically. Yes, they're 9-2. Yes, they tend to step up when it matters most, like they did last Thursday night against the Patriots. The last couple of drives of the game, they found a way to make a stop when they couldn't make a stop all night. The Jets' defense is good enough to shut down the Minnesota offense. The question is, can the Jets' offense do enough to take advantage of a bad Minnesota defense? And you can make the argument that the Jets can, Peter.
Look, I think the way the Jets' defense has played so far this year, they can play with anybody. The question is, as you say, you know, is Mike White going to be able to be consistent enough with that offense with not much of a running game? Is he going to be able to be consistent enough with a real young offense and young offensive weapons? You know, I mean, they basically need a couple of very young players, you know, Elijah Moore and Garrett Wilson, to be big in this game in Minnesota. Because, look, with the weapons the Vikings have, and look, I think, you know, we talk about what's fun about this weekend. I want the ISO cameras every time Justin Jefferson is on Sauce Gardner. I mean, you know, if I'm doing that game, you know, if I'm the producer in that game, I am devoting one camera the entire game to Justin Jefferson. And every time that he's on Sauce Gardner, I want the replay of that after the play. That's how great a matchup and how fun a matchup that is. So, Mike, there's so many reasons why this is a really cool game, a fun game, and that's certainly one of them, Jefferson against the Sauce.
Sauce Gardner, the prohibitive favorite for Defensive Rookie of the Year. He has shown that he has coverage skills, but when you face Justin Jefferson, you better have ball skills too. You may have him covered, he's still going to go get the ball, and no matter how hard you hit him or he hits the ground, he's not losing possession of the ball once he gets it. And obviously Sauce Gardner has not seen anyone like Justin Jefferson in his rookie NFL season. So that should be a great game. How about the Commanders at the Giants? The Commanders 2.5-point road favorites against the New York Giants. Giants 7-4, Commanders 7-5. It feels like these teams are moving in different directions, which helps explain why the Commanders are favorites away from home. Yeah. The Giants have just kind of been in a funk lately, Peter. Do you see them snapping out of it? Was there anything that you saw last Thursday against the Cowboys that gives you confidence they can snap out of it?
The one thing I saw against the Cowboys is that they battled. I mean, for them to be ahead in that game at halftime, even though that was sort of a Scott Novak special, you know, there were more flags than points. It was a ridiculously flag-filled game. You know, the fact is, they now have lost consecutive weeks decisively by the time the game was over to Detroit and to Dallas. And if they lose this game to Washington this week, for all the hullabaloo about the New York Giants, if Washington beats the Giants on Sunday, the New York Giants will be in sole possession of last place in the NFC East. Remember 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we're all saying, oh, God, the Giants are a cinch for the playoffs. Well, then they lost to Detroit, and then everybody started looking at the schedule down the stretch, which ain't easy. And so I think I look at this and I say, you know, Mike, you know what said a lot to me, quite honestly? It said a lot to me that the NFL, in flexing Miami at the Chargers for next Sunday night. Do you know what game they bypassed? The Giants and the Eagles.
Which one? Giants-Eagles. Yes.
They bypassed the Giants and the Eagles. Now, normally, would you say that bypassing the best team in the NFC against a rising division rival that has shocked the world this year and is 7-4. Does that make any sense at all? Really? Does it make any sense? It says to me the NFL thinks that the Giants' elevator button is going down and it's an express. And so that, to me, you know, the Giants can reverse that. the Giants can beat Washington on Sunday and again prove to the world you don't know what you're talking about. But we're going to have to see that to believe it's Sunday in the Meadowlands.
Yeah, also sacrificing the top market in the country, too. Another reason to consider that game. But you're right, the NFL picking a game that will be more exciting. And that's the way that the flex should be. Mike Tirico said this on the SI Media podcast this week with Jimmy Traina. The whole idea of flexing should be to put the best possible game for the benefit of the fans in prime time. And all other factors should take a back seat to that. You and I both know, Peter, that sometimes they don't for a variety of reasons. But it should be the best possible game. And in that case, Chargers-Dolphins, a better game than Giants-Eagles, even if Giants-Eagles possibly could deliver a better overall viewership for the contest. All right, let's take a break. When we return, the Titans face the Eagles. Another great game to be played, and A.J. Brown getting a chance to revenge against the team that traded him. More PFT Live right after this.
Of course, I've come to peace about it. You know, I'm with the Eagles. We're 10-1. You know, we're doing a really good job here. You know, of course, early on, you know, I had mixed emotions, but you know, I changed my family life forever. You know, that was the goal. You know, so you know, I'm thankful for Tennessee, but you know, I'm here in Philly now. When you go through things in this league, you learn that it's a business. You know, of course, you know, early on, and I wanted to try to finish my career tight, and I think I made that, I stated that. But, you know, I learned it's a business, and you got to do what's best, because they're going to do what's best for them. So, and you grow up.
One of the big surprises during the first round of the 2022 draft, the Titans sending A.J. Brown to the Philadelphia Eagles as he entered a contract year. They didn't want to pay him big money. The Eagles were happy to do it and give up a first-round pick to do so. The Titans select receiver Treylon Burks, who has begun in recent weeks to round into the form that they need him to. He's fought through some injuries. But A.J. Brown, look, he has sent, I think, some mixed signals about whether he wanted out or whether they decided to trade him. It is unconventional to scratch off a lottery ticket and trade it in for another lottery ticket instead of paying the player and keeping the player. That's why you use first-round draft picks, to get a guy who's going to become part of your nucleus, part of your foundation, and you do have to pay him a second contract. That's part of the price you pay for having a great player in round one, but that's what the Titans decided to do, and now they get to see A.J. Brown and the rest of the Eagles. Great matchup. 7-4 Titans coming off of a loss that many expected would not occur to the Bengals, especially after the postseason loss to Cincinnati last year. At the Eagles, 10-1. Eagles still 4.5-point favorites, Peter. I feel a level of desperation from Mike Vrabel and company for this one. Look, the Eagles don't have a huge cushion in their division. They definitely don't have a huge cushion in the race for the number one seed in the NFC. But, you know, the Titans, yeah, they're going to win their division, but you don't want to be the four seed if you can avoid it and have to play the best number two seed, the best number two team in one of the other divisions when it's time to get to the playoffs. You want to be higher in the pecking order, and the Titans are in danger of losing that if they keep losing games.
I just thought of exactly what you were saying, Mike, about games like this and why they're important for Tennessee. I mean, just let's project into the future for the third weekend of January. Tennessee's home. They're the four seed. And here come the Miami Dolphins. Do you really want that? Do you really want that? Or might be the Buffalo Bills, you know? So do you really want that? I don't think you want that, you know? And so I think the one thing about this game that is so interesting, and I know that everybody will talk about the A.J. Brown factor, and I'm going to say one thing about the A.J. Brown factor. Mike, do you remember back to draft night and draft weekend when, you know, you saw, and look, Mike Vrabel is one of those guys, the old cliche, keeps his cards close to the vest, okay? But didn't you sense on draft weekend that Mike Vrabel
there it is.
Was not
well done.
Happy.
Control room.
There
it is.
That's fantastic.
There it is.
There he is.
He's got
there
that little. Okay. He's got that little. That little neck thing, like.
Yeah.
Yes.
The shake of the head, saying, "Are you kidding me?"
There it is.
We have tried for years to develop our own stars here in Nashville, and now we can't pay, you know, one of the top five receivers in football. Now we're letting him go. And again, look, so they get Treylon Burks for him. And I understand, Mike, you know what? There are some teams, I could not shake the feeling that night after that trade was made. I said, this was a Tampa Bay Rays move. That's what it hit me as. You know, the fact that, so the Rays, once they get a gigantic star, are not going to pay him $25 million a year. They're just not going to do it. You know, and that's obviously in baseball. But in football, it struck me that John Robinson and Amy Adams Strunk had a number. And if they couldn't get to that number, including the guarantee, you know, obviously, if they couldn't get to that number, then they were going to listen to offers for him. And obviously, the Eagles swooped in. And right now, they are on course right now. If A.J. Brown stays healthy, he's on course to have about a 1,400-yard season or 13-something yard season. And Mike, he's averaging almost 16 yards a catch. He is exactly what Jalen Hurts needed. And look, every week you look at it and every week you look at the impact that A.J. Brown makes in games. And he has been a gigantic help for the Philadelphia Eagles to be sitting there with the number one seed right now.
First of all, thank you for calling it a Tampa Bay Rays move and not a Pittsburgh Pirates move. And not reminding me of the fact that the Pirates would do the same damn thing and likely will again and again. You mentioned Jalen Hurts, the friendship between Hurts and Brown, one of the big reasons why Brown ended up in Philadelphia. And it was one of the steps taken in the offseason by Howie Roseman, the GM of the Eagles and company, to support Jalen Hurts. And look at what we have from Jalen Hurts now. Incredible combination of running and throwing and leadership. A clear MVP candidate as the Eagles move toward the number one seed. 157 rush yards and 153 pass yards last week against the Green Bay Packers in primetime. Only the fourth guy in league history to do that. And, Peter, I'm just so impressed with everything about Jalen Hurts. And as a runner, he has found a midpoint between the Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, high-end takeoff, and the Patrick Mahomes ability to weave and understand where he is, where everyone else is, and where I can go and what I need to do. And he slaps it all into one package. And he's one of the most dangerous offensive threats in the NFL. I think he's underrated, and he's one of the big reasons why they're getting it done. And having A.J. Brown on the field helps as well. And the thing is, you can have one of these 336 rushing yard nights, and because of Hurts' leadership, you're never going to hear a peep from A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith that the ball wasn't thrown enough in their direction.
Mike, you know, it's amazing to me that, you know, I see some of these MVP polls and all that stuff. And I think most people, I think it's very logical to have Patrick Mahomes number one, which I do. And I have Jalen Hurts number two. And I see some people who you know, have the odds or whatever it is, having them down 3, 4, or 5. I mean, look, the MVP is a very subjective thing, obviously. You have an opinion about who's the most valuable. But, you know, this is a guy who has morphed from being a basically a quarterback who you think that Nick Sirianni wants to be kind of a classic, we want you to run. We want you to have the threat of a run. But we want you to be mostly a pocket guy, okay? Maybe throwing on the run some, but, you know, not necessarily running that much. And in the last 2 weeks, he's run 33 times, and he's averaged 7.5 yards every time he runs the ball. This is the definition of a gigantic weapon in the NFL. When you're running for 240 yards or whatever it is over a two-game period, you are putting yourself into the Vic stratosphere and into the Lamar Jackson stratosphere. It's kind of funny, into the Justin Fields stratosphere when he plays. But what I look at right now is just how incredibly diverse he can be. And if you right now are a defensive coordinator trying to game plan against the Philadelphia Eagles, you say, huh, you've got one of the great deep threats in football, you know, in A.J. Brown. You've got a guy who can hit him and has proven all year that he can hit him. And then you've also got a guy who runs the ball with as big a threat as Michael Vick ever was in a game. And so that, to me, that is a dangerous, dangerous thing. And that's why, if you're the Tennessee Titans, I'm not exactly sure how you're game planning this game on the defensive side of the ball.
And even if you game plan it, then you got to still implement that plan and stop it, which I think is a different proposition altogether. Let's take a break. When we return, there was a need for a cleanup at the local Walmart on aisle 5. Nathaniel Hackett made the mess Wednesday and took out the mop bucket on Thursday. We'll talk about that when PFT Live continues right after this.
Coach, are there any scenarios where you'd make a change at quarterback if you thought it would give the team a better chance to win?
Right now, no.
It never even crossed my mind. I mean, it's not even close. I mean, he's our quarterback. He's been awesome. He's awesome with the team. He works harder than, I mean, it's unbelievable what he does and how much he's helped all our young. I mean, think about how many young guys we've had to come in there and play for us this year. I mean, we've got all kinds of rookies, undrafted rookies, all these guys. And a lot of the reason why they're doing what they're doing and able to get out there and execute it because Russell's taking that extra time to work with them. So, I mean, he's doing everything he can to help this football team. And he's our starting quarterback, and that's it.
So it started on Wednesday, and the news got obscured by the question of whether half the team did, half the team didn't, how many were, how many weren't present for Sierra's birthday party for her husband, Russell Wilson, who turned 34. It was a surprise party. And my guess is they didn't serve pigs in a blanket at the event. Likely the event of the year that you wouldn't want to miss if it's free food, free drink, and free entertainment. But lost in all that back and forth, and there was the report or whatever it was from NFL media that Russell Wilson has lost some of the locker room. Nathaniel Hackett was asked, point blank, would you consider making a quarterback change if it meant your team would be more likely to win games? And he said, right now, no. That was it. Broncos sent out the transcript with that in it. They do a great job of sending out transcripts with the question and the answer. Turns out, immediately afterward, he realized what he'd done. He got in touch with Mike Kliss of 9 News in Denver, and he got out the mop bucket, as I said earlier. Now, that was Wednesday. Kliss tweeted it. It wasn't in the transcript that they sent out later. This is the Kliss tweet. Followed up with Hackett after his podium. The truth is, Hackett followed up with him. Hackett initially said right now no on that question. Hackett strongly clarified he's not changing quarterbacks, not even a thought, not even a question. Russ is our quarterback. You heard the sound from yesterday on SiriusXM NFL Radio as Hackett tries to undo the damage. And Peter, there's two explanations here. Hackett either accidentally said something he doesn't believe, or he accidentally told the truth. Either way, it's an example of one of the skill sets a head coach must have. You must message properly. You must always say the right thing at the right time. And right now, no, was not the thing to say. And then when you realize you screwed up, the challenge becomes, what do you do? Do you let it float? Or do you go back and try to clean it up? And I think in this case, he may have compounded the mistake. He may have made it more conspicuous by trying to clean it up. Just let it go. Is anybody going to dispute the possibility that at some point, if this continues, you have to see what someone else can do at quarterback? This isn't Tom Brady in his prime that's being undermined by Bill Belichick. This is Nathaniel Hackett stating the obvious. Russell Wilson just isn't getting it done right now. So the whole thing was a great exercise in one of the skills that separates a good coordinator from a good head coach. Coordinator's never in that spot. Coach is in that spot all the time. And coach has to get it right every time, Peter.
When I heard that, I just said, right now, no. Let me just think for a minute. It's not like Nick Foles is his backup quarterback. You know, it's not like Jacoby Brissett is his backup quarterback. The backup quarterback is Brett Rippon. Okay? Now, I don't say this to disparage Brett Rippon, but if he's not the number 32 backup quarterback in football, he's maybe 30 or 31. Okay? So, but and that's just simply stating a fact. Brett Rippon is not a good backup quarterback in the NFL. You wouldn't think of replacing him, replacing Russell Wilson. Now, second part of this is, you know, the reason why you can't introduce this as even a factor in the thing is that there is a pile of dung falling down on Russell Wilson's head right now. And it has been falling for the last month nonstop. Justifiably. But what you are trying to do as the head coach of this team, what you're trying to do is you're trying to do everything humanly possible to make sure that that dung storm does not fall with any kind of help from the team. Okay? And when he said, right now, no, immediately my first thought was, he just helped. You know, he just basically said, well, right now, no, but who knows? Next week, the week after? So, yes, that's Nathaniel Hackett's fault. And, Mike, you know, earlier in the show, when we were talking about how this Justin Reed, Hayden Hurst thing was total nonsense, at least to me, okay? I mean, this is meaningful to me. It's meaningful. And because the head coach, and again, maybe he made a mistake, or maybe he was saying, I can't stand seeing this either. And I don't care if we got to play the backup center at quarterback. I can't keep putting Russell Wilson out there. So you don't know what he meant, but that was not a good moment for Nathaniel Hackett.
I tell you what I need you to do when we're done today, I'd like for you very much to clear your calendar for the rest of the day, clear your schedule. We're going to get on the phone because I think we now have to sit down and put together not necessarily a script. We can do the movie treatment like the one that Kramer did when he moved to LA for a little while. And we can rough out a lot of the details, characters, storyline. That'll all take care of itself because we already have the title. And the title is Dungstorm. Dungstorm is the title. We will make it work. You start with Dungstorm, baby. You got yourself a box office winner. Let's go ahead and take a break. Show me something, draft. Don't show me a Dungstorm when PFT Live continues right after this. Week 13 began last night with the Bills beating the Patriots 24-10 every Friday in season. We have the Show Me Something draft, and it can be anyone, anything. It doesn't mean you're under pressure. We just want to see. We want to get our popcorn, and we want to see this person do their thing. Peter, you got the first pick.
Show Me Something, Daniel Jones. And Mike, you know, I've missed saying Show Me Something, Daniel Jones. I've really missed that. But Show Me Something, Daniel Jones. Listen, you had a nice little honeymoon for the first 2 months of this year. Really nice honeymoon. Then things got a little bit rocky in the last 4 weeks, whatever it was. And right now, this is what your general manager, your head coach, your owner want to see when they're thinking about signing you for the next X number of years. This is a back-to-the-wall, feet-on-the-edge-of-the-cliff game. Washington coming in to play you. This is a team that you have owned in your career. You need to come out in this game. Well, maybe not own, but at least had a mortgage on. But this is a game that you have to win. Show me something, Daniel Jones. You've got to beat Washington to avoid the basement in the NFC East.
Show me something, Tua Tagovailoa. This is the week to do it. At San Francisco against a 49ers team whose defense has not allowed a point in the second half of four straight games, who shut out the New Orleans Saints last weekend on the very field where we'll be playing. Oh, and to complicate matters, on Thursday, Jimmy Garoppolo just happened to blurt out at his press conference that the Dolphins were one of the teams in the mix to trade for Jimmy G earlier this year. Would they have traded for Jimmy Garoppolo to be the backup? Or would they have traded for Jimmy Garoppolo to be the starter? Interesting wrinkle that gets thrown into the punch bowl as we approach this game where Tua has a chance, even though we all won't get to watch it. We'll know about it, and we'll see the highlights, and we can watch the replay on NFL Plus or NFL Network or wherever else it shows up if it ends up being a pretty good game. But this is Tua's chance to really shut everybody up, make a big throw in a big spot, win a big game, and move to 8-4. Show me something, Tua Tagovailoa.
To move to 9-3, right, Mike? Instead of moving to
9-3. Sorry,
8-3.
9-3.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Even better. 9-3.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not
and to tie Buffalo for the division lead, and they have the tiebreaker right now. But anyway, okay.
Yes.
Show me something, Aaron Rodgers. Okay, so you're 4-8. It's been a lost season for you, and you've played at times like a lost sheep in the pasture of life. And I think right now, the logical thing to do, some would say right now, is to play Jordan Love. So right now, you've got to get to the point to 5-8. And you've got to get to that point against a team you have owned in a stadium that you have owned, Soldier Field. And you have to do this because if you don't, the voices to play Jordan Love will be cacophonous on Monday and even on Sunday night. Show me something, Aaron Rodgers. Show me that you should try to lead the Green Bay Packers to the most unlikely playoff berth in recent Packer history.
Only from Peter King do you get Dungstorm one segment and Cacophonous the next segment. Show me something, Deshaun Watson. When it was August and they were figuring out the final specifics of the Deshaun Watson suspension and 11 games came into focus, Watson wanted 10, league wanted 12. They split the difference at 11, presumably. First game back, what is it? Houston Texans, back in town, the place where he became a star, the place he couldn't wait to get out of, the place where he created a major distraction with 20-plus lawsuits. His first game back in 700 days on that field. Yes, he'll be rusty. Yes, it's his first game with a new team. Yes, there are plenty of other factors that could make it difficult for him to be the best he can be. But, we're all going to be saying, show me something, Deshaun Watson, when that game starts at 1 o'clock Eastern on Sunday. We'll take a break. We'll wrap up this Friday edition of PFT Live with the last round of the Show Me Something draft right after this. There are the first two rounds for the Show Me Something draft for week 13. One more to go. Peter King, you are on the clock.
Show me something, Trevor Lawrence. You know what, Mike? No one's talking about the Jacksonville at Detroit game, but I find this game really interesting. At the beginning of this year, I said that I think that both the Lions and the Jaguars, the elevator was going up, and I predicted both of them to be 7-10. Well, one of them, they're both 4-7. One of them is going to win their fifth game in the first week of December. And so I think both of these teams have shown real progress this year. And I think that's encouraging for both. But I talked to Doug Peterson last week and I said, this to me was a coming of age game for Trevor Lawrence to come out and beat a good Baltimore Ravens team with a big drive at the end of the game. And he said, absolutely agree. Show me something, Trevor Lawrence, that you can stack another good performance against a tough team on last week's good performance.
Show me something, Tom Brady. The Buccaneers somehow blew a late lead. For the first time in Brady's career, he was 2-18-0 when leading by 7 or more points in the final minute, and they lost to the Browns. And Todd Bowles, the coach of the team, put it on the players, the leaders, to make sure this stuff doesn't happen, and they turn it around. They have the Saints coming to town on Monday night. They need this one to keep the Saints from catching up, to keep the Falcons from catching up, to keep the Panthers from having a chance to catch up. This is the one that gets things on the right track as they try to win the division, get to the playoffs, and who knows what happens then. I know what happens now. The show ends. We're out of time. Peter, great stuff as always. Everyone enjoy the games this weekend. We'll see you back here bright and early Monday morning.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.